We're starting on the bottom of Membet Amud Bet. The Gemara here is going to dissect the statement of Shmuel that we saw in the Gemara, that Shmuel says that when it comes to a shutfim or shutfut, that the shutfim are first of all machzikin zelzeh, which is what the Gemara dealt with until this point. Now we're going to have umeidim zelzeh, they're allowed to testify one for the other. Benase shomer sachar zelzeh, and they're able to establish a relationship, but they would be shomrei sachar each to the other. So that's what the Gemara is asking about here at the bottom of Membet Amud Bet, umeidim zelzeh. Why can they testify one for the other? Amai nugim beidut anhein. They are nugea beidut, meaning that the partnership is a joint ownership, and by one testifying on behalf of the other to keep the property in his friend's hand, it affects his ability to hold on to the property, since the relationship is a 50-50 or a partnership relationship. Whatever he does to save his friend will also save him in this instance. Mar says, Hacha maiskinan, dichtiv lei, that he wrote to him, din udvarim ein li asa dezu. So that he wrote that I am relinquishing any sort of ownership over this property. Now, the way that Rashbam learns that I'm relinquishing ownership of this property is that he's actually giving the property to the other individual. I mean, one of the partners is removing himself from the partnership and giving the full ownership of the partnership to partner number two, who will now own 100% of the partnership. Rabbeinu Gershom learns that the issue here is that they both partners write to each other this relinquishment of control or ownership, but they do it in a way such that, for instance, they had a property and now they were 50-50 partners in the property. Then they split the property. Each one takes 50% of the property. So now, if something happens to the property, then that would annul the division and they'd have to go back and redivide the property. So for instance, if someone comes and takes 20% of the property away, then they'll have to go back and redivide it so each one has 40% of the property. But what they're trying to do here is saying that I don't have any claims on you. Once we divided property into 50-50, we dissolved, seems almost dissolved the partnership in that way. I can't come back to you. If someone comes and takes a piece of my land, I can't come back to redivide the partnership. The split now is final, and I will have no claim against you. And that's what each partner writes. So that's the explanation of the Reino Gershom. Again, the Ashbam says that one of the partners is relinquishing control to the other partner. So the Gemara says, okay, v'chi katav lo mayhavi. If you use that language of relinquishment, does it really work? V'hatanya, we have a braisa. Omer l'chaveiro dinu dvarim en li asa dezu, v'en li esek ba, v'yadai misulo ketemenu lo amar klon. That those types of languages of relinquishment of control don't work. Meaning, when do they work, these types of lishonot? These types of lishonot are used or work in an instance where you don't yet to have ownership over something. When you are trying to prevent yourself from attaining ownership, then you can remove or you can use lishonot that are of relinquishment. But when it comes to your ownership over something, you can't just simply relinquish ownership, meaning that you have to either be mafgirit properly, or you have to give it to the individual. You have to hand over control somehow to the individual. You have to use a lashon that gives it to the individual, not simply say that I am relinquishing or I am removing myself from the property. So that lashon doesn't work here because the partner already owns the property. If he owns the property already, he can't remove himself by using any of these lashonot. Where it says, Achim eskinah shekana miyado, that he made a kinyan here. Not only was this language, but there was also a formal kinyan that was done by the other partner. Again, according to the Rashbam, that the other partner now takes full possession through this kinyan, or what's a kinyan sudar, right, using a kinyan sudar according to the Rashbam, or according to the Beinu Gershom, they made a kinyan to give tokef, to give strength to the statement that they are finalizing this deal of the split, that this kinyan adds a dimension of finality or gemirat hadat to the split, and therefore in this case the lashon will work, even though lashon by itself would not work, but together with a kinyan or paired with a kinyan, that would be enough to have him either relinquish control according to the Rashbam and give it to the other party, or according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, finalize the split between them where they have no residual claims against each other. What is the kinyan do for you over here? Hari ma'amida bifnei bal chuvo. Why? Because there's an additional benefit to the individual over here, and that is from the moment he gives up control of the property, according to the Rashbam, he sold it. Again, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, he finalized the split of the partnership over here. Once he's relinquished control, he's actually done something that affects every party after that point, meaning that any party after that point, that one comes and makes a claim against him, he has no longer has any ownership. But what that is not true about is anybody who had a relationship prior to that point. For instance, a creditor who had a relationship with this individual prior to the split of the partnership, then that creditor still has a right to go after this property. So if the property is in the hands of his partner, then it has value to him because his creditor or creditor that preceded his giving it over to his partner can now go and grab that property, and that will fulfill his loan. On the other hand, if he loses the property, I mean the partner, his partner loses the property, then he doesn't have that ability anymore because the creditor can't go after this other party. This other party has a right that supersedes his right. So actually by testifying to keep it in his partner's hand, by testifying to keep it in the other person's hands, it actually accrues to his benefit. Why does it accrue to his benefit? For any transaction or any relationship that he had prior to the point that he gave it over to his partner. So therefore, he is no gia be'iduto. When he comes, this partner, this individual, and this Reuven comes along and says to Shimon, yes, here's all your, I give you everything of the partnership. And then afterwards, we have Levi showing up and saying, listen, it's my property. And Reuven says, you know what? I'll come and testify on Shimon's behalf. His testimony on Shimon's behalf is actually to his benefit because Reuven's creditors could come and take that property because they preceded the dissolution of the partnership. They preceded him giving it over to Shimon. So Gemara says, someone who sells property to his friend without achrayut, without any recourse, ain meido. Despite the fact that there's no recourse over here, he cannot testify on his behalf. True, he's not nogea b'davar with regard to the specific transaction. He sold it. He was sold it to this individual. Now this individual has no recourse against him. Or if he goes and testifies on his behalf, he's not nogea b'edutu with regards to that transaction. But he is nogea b'edutu with previous transactions with his creditors. So again, if Reuven sells property to Shimon, Shimon without recourse. Now, if the property is taken away from Shimon, Reuven is not on the hook for anything. So therefore, you'd think that Reuven can come and testify on Shimon's behalf to keep the property with him. The Gemara says no. Why? Because when it's in the hands of Shimon, Reuven's creditors that preceded this gift or preceded this sale will be able to take this property. Whereas if it's taken away from Shimon, Reuven's creditors will have nowhere to go, nowhere to get their claim fulfilled. So therefore, he is no gebe dutu. He does have a interest in seeing the property remain in Shimon's hands. So Gemara says, "Hachav ma'iskino the kabbalah le'achrayut." Right, that over here he did accept achrayut. The case is that he accepted achrayut. So now Gemara says, "Achrayut aman." What type of recourse? What type of responsibility did he accept? Inem achrayut alma. If he accepted responsibility that Reuven sold it to Shimon, and for whatever reason Shimon loses the property, Reuven is responsible. Then koshkein denechle. Then certainly he's a nogea beduto. Then Reuven definitely wants to see and stay in Shimon's hands because if it's taken from Shimon, Reuven's going to have to compensate him for it. So it's clear there that he's nogea beduto. So that can't be the case. Ela what? Achrayut atile machmate. What Reuven says is, I will guarantee you any recourse that comes from me. So what happens now? Someone comes to take the property away from Shimon. Now, Reuven is a disinterested party. Why is he a disinterested party? Because if, first of all, the property is taken from Shimon, he has no recourse against Reuven. So Reuven doesn't really matter to him that the property is taken, so therefore he can testify. What about the fact that transactions, the creditors of Reuven that preceded this transaction, they can go after that property? So it is in his best interest to keep it with Shimon. That's not the case here. Why? Because Reuven accepted responsibility, meaning that he said that if the property Shimon is taken away from you because of me, Reuven, because I, my creditors, or something that I did, I will replace it for you. So all Reuven does by keeping it in Shimon's hands is he changes who his creditor is, meaning that if Shimon loses the property, then to one of Reuven's creditors, Reuven's going to have to repay Shimon. If the property's gone from Shimon, then Reuven's going to have to pay his creditors. So either way, he has a creditor, he has an outstanding debt. So to him, he's indifferent with whether the property's with Shimon and his creditors, his original creditors, are his creditors, or whether the property is taken away by the creditors from Shimon or taken away by someone else from Shimon, and now he owes the money to Shimon instead. So for him, he's indifferent with the outcome of the situation. Mar now asks, when the partner relinquishes his control, does that really work? V'hatanya, we have a b'raisa. B'nei ir sheganav sefer Torah shelahem. There's a city, and their Sefer Torah was stolen. Ein danin b'dayne oto ha'ir. The dayanim, cannot be from that city because they are Nogea Be'edutan. It's the Sefer Torah from their city, and they have a vested interest. They have a monetary interest in the Sefer Torah because it belongs to the city. Therefore, they cannot be the judges in the case. And similar to those people, the individuals from that city may not testify against the Ganav or the Gazlan because they are Nogea Be'edutan. The fact that the Sefer Torah is returned to their city has value or monetary value for them. So because they are Nogea Be'edutan, they cannot be the Dayanim, and they are not going to be Edim in this case. Where it says, if you have the ability to relinquish control in a partnership, why can't two of the citizens of the city relinquish their control or relinquish their ownership over the Sefer Torah? They'll relinquish their ownership or partnership in the Sefer Torah to the rest of the city, and therefore they will no longer be Nogea Be'edutan. If they're not Nogea Be'edutan, they could be Dayanim, they could be Edim. Why don't we use that solution over here? Where it says, Shiny Sefer Torah de l'shmia kai. Right, that Sefer Torah is different because the whole purpose of the Sefer Torah is to hear from it. I mean, the value of the Sefer Torah is not necessarily in owning the Sefer Torah. The value is in the city owning a Sefer Torah, because if the city owns a Sefer Torah, he'll be able to yotzei his mitzvah of listening to the Kriyat HaSefer Torah. This is a raya to those that believe that the mitzvah of Sefer Torah is the Shmia, not just the Kriya, but that the Shmia also devolves upon each individual. That not the whole Kahal, it's not that there's a din in the Kahal to have Shmia, but rather that each individual has a din in Shmia. And therefore, this individual benefits from the fact that there's a Sefer Torah in the city, because he's able to be Shomea, he's able to hear the Kriyat HaSefer Torah. So if that's the case, even if he relinquishes ownership or partnership control in the Sefer Torah, he still has a benefit from the city having the Sefer Torah, and he'll be Nogea Be'edutan. So Gemara says, Tashma, HaOmer Tznu Maneh L'Bnei Iri. It says, give this 100 zuz to my city. The dayanim of that city can't be brought, if he's brought to, you know, to take the money from him or to uphold his commitment to the city. You can't use judges from that city. And the witnesses can't come from that city as well, because all of them are Nogea Be'edutan. This is money that's going towards the city, and the city's coffers or money that goes to the city benefits all of its residents. So am I, again, then if this is all the city or the residents of a city are basically a partnership, so why can't two of them relinquish their control or relinquish their ownership in the partnership? They'll, you know, give up their own, and then they will be the judges, or again, they could be the edim. Where it says, Hachanami b'sefer Torah, that the case is that he's talking about a Sefer Torah. I mean, he's donating money towards a Sefer Torah. He's paying to give a Sefer Torah. So again, the Sefer Torah is an unusual case that even when you relinquish monetary ownership, there's still benefit to you from the Shmia, from the hearing of the Sefer Torah, having a Sefer Torah in the city. So Tashma, Homer Tznu Maneh L'Aniyei Iri, person who says, give 100 zuz to the poor people of my city, Ein Dainin B'Dainei Oto Ayir. Again, the judges can't come from that city, V'Emin Re'ayim Anshei Oto Ayir, and the residents of that city can't be witnesses in that case. Rambam says, "Vitisbaro." Does that make sense? Aniim shakle dayanim ifsali. Wait a minute. The whole question here doesn't even make sense. Why is that? Because you're talking about that he's giving money to the aniim, to the poor people of the city, and all of a sudden you're going to say that the judges in the city now are nifsal because he's giving money to the aniim. They're not the aniim. They're not getting the benefit from that money. So why shouldn't they be able to judge in the city, or also other residents of the city? Why can't they be edim in this case? Ela ema ein danim b'dainei aniyei oto ayir. That if the dayanim are part of the aniyei ayir, then they can't be judges, because then they're nogea be'edutan, because they're getting money from this individual, because they're part of the class of individuals, the aniyim, that are getting the money. Vein mi vin raya mani oto ayir. So Gemara says, v'amai. Again, why not? Listalku beitrei nafshayu v'lidainu. Same issue that we had before. Why not just have them relinquish their ownership? I mean, they'll disavow their rights to get this money as part of aniyei ayir. Just like we said before, a partner could relinquish or disavow his control here. So too, they should be able to do the same thing over here. Once they've disavowed or relinquished their control, they should be able to be dayanim in the case. Gemara says, achanami b'sefer Torah. In this case also, he's saying that he's donating a Sefer Torah. So that's a little strange. I mean, you could say when he gives money to a city, he's giving them money because that's what he's buying it for the Sefer Torah. But when you're talking about Aniyei Ayir, why should the Sefer Torah have any relevance to Aniyei Ayir versus any other resident of the city? So then why are they called the Aniyim? Because when it comes to a Sefer Torah, the lack of a Sefer Torah makes everybody an Ani. Because since a Sefer Torah is so important to the city and everybody needs it, then everybody's classified as needy or an ani when in relationship to a Sefer Torah. So again, what the Gemara does in all these cases is basically say, why can't we replicate what Shmuel is suggesting over here, which is that a partner can relinquish or disavow his ownership and he won't be nogea b'davar? How come we have all these braitot that say that you have people who are nogea b'davar because they are recipients or they were robbed, right? Why can't two of them relinquish control, disavow control, and become dayanim or idim in the case? It should be able to work the same way. The Gemara answers in each of these cases, it has to do with the Sefer Torah. And Sefer Torah is unique. When it comes to Sefer Torah, even though you can relinquish monetary ownership, there's still a benefit or a mitzvah ownership in there, which is that by the fact that the city has a Sefer Torah, you are yotze the shmiah. You get the ability to hear the kriyat ha Sefer Torah. And that is a benefit to you. V'ibay dema, lo'olam kidiktani. Maniim mamash. Some people say, no, don't answer that. This case, the case of Sefer Torah, but it's talking about aniim. Uvenei deramu alayhu. Oh, the case here is that the city is obligated to take care of the aniim. So since the city is obligated to take care of the aniim, when this person gives money towards aniim, he's actually benefiting all the residents of the city, not just the aniim, but the residents, because now the residents won't have to lay out the money or the stucco to pay to these aniim. So when it says, hey, kitami, what's exactly this case? If they have a specific amount that they have to give, meaning that every family has to give this much towards the kupat staka, then litvu beit remenayu, maidakayitz lehu. So then let two people in this city go ahead and pay their share. They'll pay their full share to the staka, and therefore they will be now disinterested parties. If they're disinterested parties, they should be able to be don the case. They should be able to be adim in the case. So why is that the case? L'dainu. No, it's a case where there's no limit to the amount of money they're going to take to get the kupat. Whatever the kupat staka needs, they'll go and now go back to the residents of the city and take it from them. So therefore, we never know whatever this person gave towards the kupat shel staka actually benefits every resident of this city. So the Mar says, that's one solution. That nevertheless, even though it's a fixed amount per family, nevertheless, mean that even if you pay your full fixed amount and you get no benefit from his money, he still benefits the kupat shel tzedaka, which in the end benefits the city. The city in the end has to take care of these aniyim. Also, right, everybody, they have to pay out money, meaning that they could... Now they can give to more aniyim, or they can take care of the full needs of the aniyim. There's still a benefit to all the residents of the city, even if they are not monetarily directly benefiting from his gift. Nevertheless, they are benefiting from the fact that the aniyim are being taken care of with money, or this extra money. And therefore, it is a accrued benefit, or a benefit does accrue to them. So based on this, we can go back now. We understand the shita of Shmuel. The shita of Shmuel is that me'idim zelazeh, when it comes to shufim, they're allowed to testify one for the other. So why is that the case? They are nogea be'idutan. So the answer to the Gemara is that one of the partners is misalek himself. He removes himself from the picture. Now, by removing himself from the picture, he's no longer nogea b'davar. Why is he no longer nogea b'davar? He is nogea b'davar for anything that happened before the time that he removed or relinquished or disavowed his ownership. For creditors for born that time, he has a benefit because of the properties around, they can go and take it. So the Gemara says it's a case, right, where he guarantees the other partner or the other party that if it's taken because of him, meaning because of his creditors, he'll repay them. So all he's doing then is changing around who his creditor is. There's no benefit for him to have the property in his hands of this person who he either sold it to or he gave it to, because if it's in his hands, he'll be chayev to his regular creditors. If the creditors come and take it, he'll be chayev to this individual. So here, there's no nogea b'davar. So Gemara brings a number of braitot where we see that you are nogea b'davar. So Gemara says, no, that's a unique case of Sefer Torah, where you're unable to relinquish control, because even when you relinquish monetary control, you still have some benefit from the Torah. And then the Gemara, the last case is Aniyim. In the case of Aniyim, also, you might have a benefit, even though there's no fixed amount that every person in the city has to pay, but nevertheless you have a benefit from the fact that the city itself has more money in its coffers, or the city itself can take care of its aniyim better. So because of that benefit also, we're going to say that you're nogea b'davar. So the test of nogea b'davar is if your testimony brings you any benefit, or is it just trading one problem for another problem? So when it's trading one problem for another problem, then you are not nogea b'davar. If it benefits you by the fact that if it's in the hands of this person, you actually will be better off, in that case, you are nogea b'davar. Tosfos asks a couple of interesting questions here. One of them is from a Gemara in Baba Kama. We know that the Gemara in Baba Kama says that even when you sell property to a person without achrayut, without recourse, nevertheless, if the person comes, another party, a third party comes to take it away from the buyer, you, the seller, are allowed to get involved. So the person who's coming to take it away from the buyer says, what are you doing here? You're not involved in this case. It's not your property anymore. You sold it to X. I have my din in him. So no, the seller can say, I have a din with you. Why? Shalotia taromet alai. Even though he has no recourse to me and I'm not going to be out any money, still my name is on the line. He's going to give me a bad name. I sold you the property. You're going to take it away. It's going to be a bad name. And so he is about dvarim. He is about dvarim. If that's the case here, right, why does the Gemara say mamida b'fnei bal chovo is the problem? Even if it's not mamida b'fnei bal chovo, even if he keeps it with the seller or he keeps it with the other shutaf, the fact that you gifted something, you gave something to someone else and it's taken away, that's a big negative for you. That reflects poorly on you. And the fact that you're keeping it and helping them keep that property now reflects positively on you. And that benefit should be a problem of nogea b'davar. So Tosfos says you have to differentiate in cases because that is not a psul because of edut. Right? Meaning that you don't, because of that, you're not considered nogea b'edut. Or or that the buyer or the person knows for sure that it was your property and therefore he has no issue with you. So Tosfos has to come up with a case, either differentiate between cases where you're a seller and you are trying to uphold your name, then you become a baldin. You're an interested party in the fact that you're allowed to enter the case, but you're not an interested enough party where you become nogea beidut. That's one answer of Tosfos. Or the other possibility is that maybe you are nogea beidut, but we have to set up an ukimta, or in this case, where there's no taromet, a case where the individual knew clearly that it was your property, and he has no questions about your authenticity or your name over here. That's one interesting thing that Tosfos deals with. The second one is Tosfos says that in general, when we talk about nogea beidut, nogea beidut applies that you must not be nogea beidut from the time the transaction takes place all the way to the time of the testimony or the dayanim. I mean, if your status changes in between, for instance, if you were a relative and then something happens that you're no longer a relative in between, you're still pasul beidut because at the time the transaction, the time the event took place, you were nogea beidut. So why not over here too? All these brightot that the Gemara is bringing suggest what? That people of the city should be able to relinquish their control after the fact. But they were nogea b'davar when the theft took place, or they're nogea b'davar when the gift was given. So even when they relinquish the control later, why should that help? So Tosfos differentiates and says, no, that the only time we say that you have to be clear from the case, or tkhilato, that you're kasher from beginning to end, that's only a case where the psul is begufo, like being a relative. And that psul, when it has to do, the psul has to do with nogea b'davar because of you, personally, because of your personal standing, then you have to be clear from beginning to end. Whereas because if the issue of nogea beidut has to do with your monetary interests, once you've removed the monetary interests, then you don't are no longer classified as nogea beiduto. All right, now, the next part of the Gemara deals with the next statement of Shmuel, which is Nasim Shomer Sachar Zilazeh, that the two partners become Shomrei Sachar one to the other. The Gemara says, am I Shmira Babalim? We know from the Gemara, right, in Boba Mitzia, that when one person enters into a relationship of Shmirah that involves the Balim and they have another relationship with these owners or another relationship with this Shomer, that is called what's called Shmirah B'Balim, and you are not responsible. There's the Ptur. Now, it's written in the Torah, Ein Balav Yimo by Shoel, but we learned in the Gemara B'Av Metziah that it applies not only to a Shoel, but applies to a Shomer Sachar and most likely to a Shomer Chinam, that Balav Yimo is a Ptur for these types of Shomrim. So in this case, you have two shutvim, two partners. Now, each partner is watching a part of the partnership property. So each one of them is now watching for the benefit of the other party because he's watching the wholeness of the item for the entire partnership. So they're basically bartering the shmirah that they're doing. If they're bartering the shmirah that they're doing, true, they should be shomrei sachar because each one, the barter, creates a sachar here. But nevertheless, it should be a problem of balei avimo. They entered in it simultaneously into a position of shmirah, of watching these items. If they do that, that's called balavimo, that the owners are involved with another transaction beyond just the shmirah that you're doing here. In that case, you're patur. So why should they be shomrei sachar here? So I'm a papa, demolei shmor li ayom, v'ani shmor lecha machar. No, that the partnership relationship is not that one guy's watching 50% of the property, the other guy's watching the other 50%. So each partner owns 100% of the property that's being watched by one partner, and that's why it's a trade-off of Shomer Sachar. Here the case is that they say, no, the entire partnership property will be watched by one of us, today, and then the other one the next day. So meaning that there is no, in each instance of watching or Shmirah, the other party is doing nothing at that time. Since it's doing nothing at that time, that's not Shmirah Bebalim, and therefore they become Shomrei Sachar. They become Shomrei Sachar over here because the Balim are not involved. Now Tosa says, wait, why isn't that still classified as Shmirah Bebalim? Right, meaning that just the mere fact that we agree together to enter into such a relationship of saying, you know, you do it today, I'll do it tomorrow, that should be classified as Shemir Bebalim, as we saw in the Gemara in Bebu Metzia, that entering into such relationships or transactions is enough to be classified as Bala Vimo. So it says that maybe that's only true in cases of a Shoel, or in a case where they're entering into a relationship actually has some manifestation in terms of liability. So he says that maybe in the cases where your Amira is Meshabed you to start the work, or to start right away, meaning that your speech or your agreement makes something now immediately take effect, then that amira will be classified as Bali Vimo. But over here, all he's saying is, you watch today, I watch tomorrow. So your amira does nothing to obligate you today. You're not doing anything today. You're not going to watch till tomorrow. So the fact that your amira doesn't do anything, maybe that's not classified as Bali Vimo. And that's why in this case, Rav Papa's solution is enough to tell us that this case is a case of Shmira, not Shmirah Bebalim, and therefore they're classified as Shomrei Chinam. Because what would have been the Havamina? Without Shmuel, we would have thought that they're actually Shomrei Chinam. That they are, because I have to watch my part of the partnership anyway. So the same watching that I do for my part of the partnership, I do yours. I mean, there's no added, I don't do any added exertion to take care of what you need, because I have to watch my stuff anyway. So it's basically Zen Nenev Zilo Chaser because of that. So maybe they should be classified as Shomrei Chinam. Along comes Shmuel and says, no, that they're classified as Shomrei Sachar. That the added watching or the added benefit that you're providing by watching your other person's property is a Sachar. And that schar will generate or create them to be, or that bartering of that schar brings them into both Shomrei Sechar. Okay, now the Gemara continues with a new case here. Tanu Rabbanan, machar lo bayit, machar lo sadeh, ein meid li lo aleha. Now, if a person sells, Reuven sells property or sells a house to Shimon, he's not allowed to go and testify on it, because recourse, Shimon has recourse against Reuven. And therefore, if Reuven comes and testifies on behalf of Shimon, he's actually no ge'e beduto. Because Reuven is now not obligated to pay if it stays in the hands of Shimon. If it's lost by Shimon, then Reuven has to pay. So Reuven is no ge'e bedover. Aval, machar lo para, machar lo talit. If he sells him a taltalim, if he sells him a cow, if he sells him a, right, some sort of garment, right, me'id lo eleha, he's allowed to testify himself, right? Because there is no recourse. When he sells him some metaltim, there's no recourse. If there's no recourse, then he's not okay to do it. When Reuven sells it to Shimon, and then it's lost by Shimon, Reuven doesn't have to pay anything. So Gemara says, Maishna Resha, Maishna Seifu. What's the difference between these two cases? Meaning that if recourse is not necessarily stam. We don't just say stam recourse, stam no recourse. If he accepts recourse, then it shouldn't matter whether it's karka or if it's metaltim, he should be nogeve duto. If he's not accepting recourse, whether it's karka or whether it's metaltalim, he should be off the hook because he's not nogeve duto. If he's not nogeve duto because he doesn't have any responsibility to Shimon, then he should be able to testify on his behalf. So Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshet, let me explain to you the case. The ratio is a much more complicated case than we think. It's not just simply a sale. What's the case here? Reuven shegazal sadeh mishimon. Right? Shimon is the original owner. So we'll call Shimon the original owner. Reuven steals it from Shimon. And then umachra de Levi, and he sells it to Levi. So now you have Levi who's purchasing from the gazlan Reuven, and the property really belongs to Shimon. Ata Yuda. Now a third party, a totally new party, Yuda, comes, umrar er. Right? He comes and claims that Levi doesn't own this property. It really belongs to him. Yehuda says, it's all my property. So, delo lezel Shimon asid le Levi. Shimon may not testify on Levi's behalf. Shimon, the real owner, may not testify on behalf of Levi, who purchased it from Reuven the Gazlan. Because, why? De nechale de hadro. He'd prefer that the property remains with Levi, because then because then it'll return to him, because he knows he has evidence that the property was stolen by Reuven from him. If he has that evidence and it stays in Levi's hands, he'll be able to get his property back. But now if Yehuda walks off with the property, he's going to have no way of getting his property back. So Shimon has, even though he's the real owner, has a vested interest in seeing it stay in the hands of Levi over here. So Mara says, wait, let's dissect this, understand this. Because, Wait a minute. If Shimon comes and testifies on Levi's behalf that it's not Yehuda's, but it really belongs to Levi, but once he's testified it belongs to Levi, how could Shimon ever get his property back? He just said it belongs to Levi. Now we're not going to believe him when he shows up in Bezin and says, I don't know, I was just doing that to keep it in Levi's hands, but it's really my property. We're not going to believe him then. So how could he go ahead and testify on Levi's behalf that will benefit himself? It's actually to his detriment that he testifies on Levi's behalf against Yehuda. So Gemara says, no. He worded it in such a way, he was able to word his testimony that all he did was prove that it wasn't Yehuda's. He didn't say that it is Levi's, but he just proved it wasn't Yehuda's. How? He's either posel, he's coming to testify to posel the edim of Yehuda, or he is coming along to say that Yehuda was gonev the property, meaning that he does something that casts aspersions on Yehuda's ownership without affirming Levi's ownership. So because of that, he'd rather it stays in Levi's hands, because then he can go get it back from Levi. Whereas if it goes to Yehuda, he can't get it back. And his testimony on behalf of Levi is really not on behalf of Levi, it's really to negate Yehuda's ownership, and therefore it works over here. The other solution, which Tosafot points out you could have done, was you could have just been testifying that it belonged to the father of Levi. You could come along and say, no, it belonged to Levi's father, and I bought it from Levi, or I purchased it from his father. So if he did in that case, he can disprove Yehuda's ownership without destroying his ability to get it back from Levi. But that's not the way the Gemara answered. The Gemara went this way. Now the Gemara continues to ask the question, wait a minute. But why is it to his benefit to be in Levi's hands versus Yehuda's hands? Right? Because he can say, the same evidence or same testimony that he has that will benefit him to get it back from Levi, he could use that same testimony and get it away from Yehuda. So why should Shimon have any concern of whether it's in the hands of Levi or the hands of Yehuda? Either way, he has evidence that it's his. He can bring that evidence to Levi and he'll get it back from Levi. He brings that evidence to Yehuda, he'll get it back from Yehuda. So why again is he considered or classified as a nogea be'eduto here? He shouldn't be classified as nogea be'eduto because there is actually no benefit to him. Whether it's in Levi's hands, whether it's in Yehuda's hands, he's going to get it back with his evidence. So if he testifies on Levi's behalf here, or he testifies to the detriment of Yehuda, that should have no impact on the case. Gemara says, "The Amar Shena Noach Li Arishon Kasha Hemenu." So truthfully, the Gemara is quoting a lesson from the Mishnah, but it's really the verse over here. He says, "I'd rather have it in the hands of the Rishon," meaning I'd rather have it in the hands of Levi than in Yehuda. I can go to din with Levi, and I know I could win, and he's not a tough guy. But Yehuda is a really tough guy. I don't know if he listens. He really doesn't listen to Beis Din, and he doesn't. It's going to cause me a lot more problems. Even with the same Rayo that it's mine, it's much easier for me to get it back from Levi than it is for me to get it back from Yehuda. So then he has a vested interest. That's why he's classified as a nogea be'eduto here. That's why he is not free of any personal interest in this case, because when he testifies to keep it in Levi's hands, I mean, again, to negate Yehuda's testimony, that's to his benefit, because if it's in Levi's hands, he has a better chance of getting the property back than he has if it goes to Yehuda's possession. And so now, that the Gemara says causes nogea be'eduto. That would be the explanation of the ratio case. The Gemara says, v'ibayseima, there's another way to explain this ratio case, which is, Shimon has two edim that say that it's his property, and Yehuda has two edim that say that it is his property. So now you have uki trei gabi trei. You have two against two. What do we do in cases where we have two edim for each party and we don't know what the solution is? So we have different. We've seen in the Gemara called the alim gavar, but we have another principle, which is that the property remains where it is. We don't move property in that case. We leave the property with whoever's muchsak with it. Wherever the property is right now, it should remain. So now, if they go ahead and move the property to Yehuda, meaning that Yehuda comes along, testifies, and gets the property, and now it's in Yehuda's hands. Now, if Shimon brings two edim to testify on his behalf to say that it's really his property, who's holding the property? Who's in control of the property right now? Yehuda. So now you have two against two. You have a safek. We're going to leave it with Yehuda. Whereas, if Shimon is successful in keeping it in the hands of Levi, now, and then you have two against two, meaning that you have two edim that say it's Yehuda's, and you have two edim that say that it belongs to Shimon, who is the property in the hands of right now? It's really in the hands of Shimon, because Levi is really just a derivative of Shimon, because Reuven stole it from him, and then Reuven sold it to Levi. So that when it's in the hands of Levi, it's as if in the hands of Shimon, because karka is an exelet. It's never stolen, and there's no such thing as shinu reshut, and therefore it remains in the hands of Shimon all along. So what Shimon has a vested interest in here is preserving the status quo, because the status quo will accrue to his benefit when there's a safek here, because if there's a safek, then it all goes to Shimon's behalf. Whereas if Yehuda is successful in wresting the property from Levi, then the status quo will be Yehuda owning the property. If Yehuda owns the property, then when they have two against two, it's going to remain with Yehuda and not with Shimon. So if that's the case, Shimon has a vested interest in testifying against Yehuda here and keeping it in the hands of Levi. Now the Rashbam asks, why is this different than the case before? We had a case just like this before with Rav Nachman, where Rav Nachman said, we have two individuals come and have bring Edim. One brought Edim that it was his father's, and the other one didn't have Edim, and he says, I'm going to bring Edim. So then we move the property. He goes, we go ahead and give it to the one who has Edim. Then when the second party comes and brings his Edim, he says, Rav Nachman says, the court has to reverse what it did before. It has to go back and take the property away from the one that gave it to, and then give it to be the Kol Da'alim Gavah, right? Then put it back to its original status. How come over there do we restore the property to its original status, whereas over here we're not going to restore the property to its original status? If Yehuda gets a hold of it, we're going to leave it with Yehuda and not give it back to Shimon. So the Gemara, the answer, the Rashbam says that the cases are different. In the case of Rav Nachman, before in the Gemara and Baba Basra, the case there was that the two parties, the two conflicting parties, the two litigants are bringing Edim. So each one is bringing Edim, so there, the solution really should have been up front, Kol Da'alim Gavah. And when Beis Din gave it to one party over the other, that was the wrong decision. Over here, Yehuda is not coming to fight with Shimon. His testimony or his beef is with Levi. So when he comes and is litigating against Levi, right, that is one stage of Beis Din. Now, Shimon, after the fact, is going to bring Edim that it's his. That's a second case. When it comes to a second case, we're not going to reverse the act of Beis Din. I mean, within the context of a single case, we can say that if Beis Din made a mistake, we'll reverse what Beis Din did, or we'll bring it back to the status quo if both parties have equal evidence. But in a case where there's actually two stages to the case, one where Yehuda is arguing with Levi, and then a second stage where Shimon's arguing with Yehuda, then in that case, we're not going to say restore the property to Shimon like the way it was before. No, because Yehuda already prevailed against Levi, and when he prevailed against Levi, now you're trying to enter into a new case. New case, new evidence, Beis Din is going to leave the status quo, and it's going to remain in the hands of Yehuda. So that's another Rashbam differentiates with the case of Rav Nachman before and this case over here. Tosfos asks a question based on this solution in the Gemara. What was the Havamino in the Gemara? What was the Havamina in the Gemara? The Gemara here. Obviously both parties have Edim. If both parties have Edim here, otherwise, what's the case? Shimon has no case without Edim, and Yehuda has no case without Edim. So what's the Gemara's answer? Ibaidema, that both parties have Edim, that it's theirs. Of course they have Edim, that it's theirs. If they didn't have Edim, that it was theirs, there's no case here. Because Shimon doesn't have a Raya, or Yehuda doesn't have a Raya. So he says, then, according to this solution, the Gemara, what was the Havamina? If both parties had Edim, and then that's the solution, then what was the Havamina? What was the question of the Gemara that it shouldn't work in this case, or that he's not Nokei Abadover in this case? So Tosus tries to explain that the Havamina of the Gemara was that we thought originally that Yehuda had to take it away from Levi because he had Sade Deruvein Machalo Lachalo, Levi and Edim. Right? That he has Edim, that Reuven sold him the property, the Gazlan sold it to Yehuda, and Levi has no Edim that it was actually given to him. And Shimon comes to testify on Levi's behalf that actually Levi did buy it from Reuven. So that was the original, that was the Havamina of what the case or the situation was. The situation was that Yehuda had evidence that he got it from Reuven. Levi was lacking evidence that he got it from Reuven. So Shimon comes along and provides the evidence that Levi actually bought it from Reuven. So in that case, and therefore he was not no Geaba Davar, because either way, Yehuda's claim is no better than Shimon's claim, because if it ends up in Yehuda's hands or Levi's hands, either way he's going to get it back, because they bought from the Gazlan Reuven. So the Maskona, the Gemara, is no, that Yehuda's full-fledged Edim, that is his property, and full-fledged Edim is his property, then there is a difference whether it's in Levi's hands or Yehuda's hands. Okay, we'll stop over here.